May it please the Court, my name is Billy Morelli, and I represent Mr. Richard Mendel, the appellant and claimant in this case. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal or reply. Mr. Mendel seeks the return of his property with an award of attorney fees and costs incurred to protect his property interests. Mr. Mendel's appeal is much simpler than the party's briefs would imply. Subsection 4 of Section 461 of the APA controls the outcome of this case. Quote, findings of fact shall be based on facts exclusively on the evidence of record in the adjudicative proceeding and on matters officially noted in that proceeding. The hearing examiner allowed Mr. Mendel's previously scheduled full adversarial hearing to be delayed twice without good cause. First, Ms. Jacobson-Watts requested a continuance due to her family emergency. That certainly rises to the level of good cause. But she indicated she would be available again after October. The hearing examiner continued the hearing over Mr. Mendel's objection to December without having any facts on evidence to support those extra 30 days of the continuance. There was no good cause for that. Ms. Jacobson-Watts based her motion on her emergency and indicated she would be available the end of October. There was not good cause to continue a full month beyond, and Mr. Mendel objected to that continuance. Without the facts in evidence to support a finding of good cause to continue through December, the hearing examiner's order was manifestly unreasonable. Previously, the hearing examiner had indicated she was available for at least 2 days, the first week of December, to hear Mr. Mendel's case. But rather than immediately reschedule Mr. Mendel's placement on the docket, for some unknown reason, the sheriff waited 6 full weeks and then asked Mr. Mendel if he would agree to yet another continuance, and he objected. The sheriff scheduled his hearing for the second week of December over Mr. Mendel's known objection and in direct contradiction of the hearing examiner's order, and didn't even bother to motion for a continuance. The hearing examiner then found good cause for this second delay that ignored her own order, even though Mr. Mendel still does not know why the hearing examiner was unavailable. No idea. There's no facts and evidence. Subsection 4 of Section 461 of the APA is clear. Findings of fact shall be based on facts exclusively on the evidence of record in this adjudicative proceeding and on matters officially noted. And no facts are in evidence in this case for either of these delays. The most good cause would take it through October. And beyond that, he is entitled to a full adversarial hearing within 90 days, absent good cause. He did not get that, and his property now needs to be returned for the due process violation. I'll reserve my remaining.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honors. Candace Duclos appearing on behalf of the King County Sheriff's Office. I'm a deputy prosecuting attorney with King County. There's lots of issues that have been raised by defense on this appeal. I'll focus first on what Ms. Morelli just addressed, and that is whether or not there's facts in the record to support the continuance by the hearing examiner. And there certainly was. When this hearing was set, it was set at a time when the prosecutor, Ms. Jacobson-Watts, was handling it, was out of the office. As soon as she returned and knew of her unavailability, she immediately contacted the parties, advised of her family emergency, which was her father in the hospital, subsequently undergoing surgery and passing away at a later date. Ms. Morelli now concedes that that is, in fact, good cause. I think what she's glossing over is that when Ms. Jacobson-Watts sought the continuance from the hearing examiner for her medical leave, the availability that the hearing examiner provided was December. She had already had this pre-scheduled vacation. She never provided any available dates in November. And the dates that she provided in October were dates that were directly in conflict with the good cause continuance requested by Ms. Jacobson-Watts. So the Sheriff's Office directly disagrees with Ms. Morelli's assertion that there are not facts in the records to support this continuance. I want to address a few of the other points raised in her briefing. First off is the issue of this 90-day period and when that commences, how it tracks, those types of things. I think the confusion from Mr. Mendel's position is that there are kind of two terms that are being combined, and that is the forfeiture proceedings and the adjudicative proceedings. And one thing that is completely not mentioned is that the governing statute in this case that allows for seizures, RCW 6950-505, specifically states that Chapter 34, the Administrative Procedures Act, is the law that governs contested hearings. And this specific issue has gone through many cases and has dealt with this exact issue that's before this court and has ruled that the seizure triggers the forfeiture proceedings and that those proceedings have a variety of different standards and procedures that may apply depending on the outcome. And this is explained in the Escamilla case, and that is that they can be uncontested, in which case there would potentially be a default issued. They can be removed to the Superior Court or District Court, depending on the amount at issue. Or, as in this case, they can be left for administration under the APA. When left for administration under the APA, there is the 45-day period for which a claimant may make a claim. And if that happens, the adjudicative proceedings are triggered. And that's when the 90-day process starts ticking. As I indicated, that's explained in Escamilla. It's also explained in Black Corvette, as well as a number of other cases cited in the briefing. The other argument that's raised by Mr. Mendel is the issue of due process, that even if these rules, even if the court accepts the sheriff's office position that these are the rules that apply, that there's been a due process violation. And I would encourage the court to use the analysis that's been set out in prior cases and that was adopted in the case United States versus $8,850, and that is the following test. In determining whether there's been a due process violation, the court is to look at the length of delay, the reason for delay, the claimant's assertion of right to the hearing, and whether the claimant suffered any prejudice. This case, or this standard, rather, has been upheld. And in looking at those factors, the delay here is very minimal. If we consider the good cause continuance to the first week of December, the length of delay to the following week is only a few days. If you look at it as a whole from the time of the claim to the time at which the hearing was actually completed, it's 153 days, which is just a few days more than was approved by the court in Black Corvette. The reason for delay is before this court is the good cause of Ms. Jacobson's Watt's father's illness and the hearing examiner's out-of-country vacation, both of which have been upheld by lower courts in other situations as good cause. Finally, whether the claimant suffered any prejudice. And I think this is key to the court to consider if you get to this point. And the reason is that Mr. Mendel has never asserted any prejudice at any stage in this. He still does not assert any prejudice. And when absent that, I don't believe the court can find a due process violation. Anyone have any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I've been in an argument without questions before. I'm a little nervous. Due process requires that all claimants in drug forfeiture actions receive the same quantum of due process. And under the One Black Corvette case, that doesn't happen. If the King County Sheriff seizes property, a claimant might receive one quantum of due process, which is they get a note within 90 days saying something else will happen in the future. The hearing itself could happen in 5 years based on their analysis. It flies in the face of the clear language all over. The drug forfeiture statute says forfeiture proceedings commence upon seizure. How a forfeiture proceeding is different than this right here is a part of their forfeiture proceedings. It's all the same. There's no separate forfeiture proceeding and then notice proceeding. Two items I found after the briefing also support this. The civil rules, CR5A, assumes that in rem actions commence upon the seizure of property. The second paragraph of CR5A states, quote, in an action begun by seizure of property in which no person need be or is named as defendant, an in rem action, and then it goes on just to state who needs to be served, and that's whoever's in custody of the property. And another example, right in the forfeiture statute, in subsection 5, it talks about how a claimant can remove the action into district or superior court depending on the value of the property. The claimant need not have even received notice from the law enforcement agency to remove this. All that need happen is the property has to be seized, and then the claimant can remove it. Well, what are they removing? They're removing the forfeiture action, the whole thing, into court. No notice is required to remove it. No claim is required to remove it. All that's required is that the property be seized, and now the claimant is entitled to remove the whole thing to court.
Well, the case law has clearly said that the 90 days starts to run once notice is received of the desire for the hearing, and that's 90 days for the hearing. The hearing's just part of the proceeding.
The appellate case law is wrong. It just did not read
But it is the law, and the legislature has known it and hasn't said that it's an incorrect interpretation of the statute, hasn't amended or clarified or criticized that decision. So aren't you stuck with it?
No, because the statute says the proceeding is commenced upon seizure. Civil Rule 5 says in rem proceedings commence upon seizure. The forfeiture statute says it can be removed upon seizure. Everywhere it says these in rem proceedings commence
so
upon
your argument,
seizure.
Your argument
that there isn't any other proceeding
is that 90 days after the seizure, the agency loses jurisdiction to do anything?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, if it commences and Televic says that the hearing has to be held within 90 days, aren't you arguing that the court loses jurisdiction or authority after 90 days from the seizure?
If a law enforcement agency seizes property and fails to give notice within the 15 days, yeah, they lose jurisdiction. And if the seizing agency provides, if the seizing agency seizes property and no one claims the property within 45 days, a default is allowed within the forfeiture proceeding. If a claimant claims the property within 45 days, it's already commenced. Commencement is not an issue.
Right.
Under Televic, if someone claims a full adversarial hearing, a very distinct term of art, must be had within 90 days.
And you're saying that's jurisdictional?
I'm saying that's a statute of limitations, yes.
So no continuance of any kind?
Well, no, Televic allows for continuances under good cause. There was a continuance in Televic, and it had to be supported with good cause. And in this case, it's not.
So it's not jurisdictional. It's not a statute of limitations.
There
it's
are
a matter just of whether or not the continuance was properly granted.
There are times when even a statute of limitations to file an appeal can be found to have been good cause. I don't have
I'm just trying to make sure I understand
you. And I can certainly get them in front of you, but just because it's a statute of limitations doesn't mean there are not exceptions.
Is it the statute or is it the Televic gloss, the 90-day gloss when what the limitation period is?
What Televic did was it interpreted that phrase is entitled to a hearing within a reasonable period of time.
Yeah.
That was vague. It would have been unconstitutional.
But my question is, I mean, we don't really have a statute of limitation. We have some words that were that Supreme Court added in order to make the statute unconstitutional. So we're not
correct.
We're engaging in construction of what the Supreme Court said.
Yes, the Supreme Court did use the word statute of limitations, so it's their words, and I'm repeating them.
All right.
Thank you. Chumbly and Snohomish County is next.